Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
That's nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the VeloCast. Now, normally I have here a paragraph or two which aims to sum up exactly what happened on the day's racing. However, for Stage 19 of the 2018 Giro d'Italia, all anyone should have to say is, wow. Chris Froome started the day 3 minutes and 22 down on the Maglia Rosa, but from 80 kilometres out and after a decimation of the peloton by Team Sky, Chris Froome went on a daredevil solo attack that by the end of the day and over 3 epic climbs, he'd taken both the stage, the Cima Coppi and the overall race lead. So I shall say it again, wow, just wow.
Incredibly impressive day's racing, and you know, whatever happens in the future, we must just celebrate what is one of the most magnificent days racing that you are ever going to see. You know, purely as entertainment, absolutely stunning. I don't think I've seen a GC stage that was so actually amazing, isn't too strong a word, since 1989 when we all watched that turnover in the final few metres of the Champs-Élysées, Laurent Fignon collapsing breathless to the ground while Greg LeMond celebrates. And cycling today was the winner, whichever way you look at it. You know, we saw from poor Simon Yates, we got the answer about whether he was really, really tired. I think he might even be ill, he cracked so much, but still dug deep and went hard. We saw Team Sky perform what was clearly a plan. You know, none of that was accidental today. They'd sat down, they'd analysed everything, and they clearly meant at that point in the Finisterre for Kenny Ellison to pull aside and for Chris Froome to spin away. We saw a magnificent, classy ride from Tom Dumoulin, who looked around, realised that the chase was his to organise, and did most of the work, you know, himself for long, long periods, because he knew it was his responsibility. He just got on with it. We saw fantastic battles for the white jersey, drama all the way through. And the biggest delight for me today is it looks, as we're recording now, that everybody got in within the time limit, because I would have felt really bad about anybody who participated in that epic thing we saw today if they'd been forced to go home and the gruppetto had been outside time. Just fantastic bike racing. I was actually giggling uncontrollably at stages of it because it was just so extraordinary.
I think we've just witnessed one of the all-time greatest stages. That was worthy of Merckx. It was worthy of Bartoli or Coppi or the brilliant...
You have to wonder how those guys would have been treated if social media had been about when Coppi or Merckx took off on 175 kilometres solo or something.
Well, we can only thank the fact that social media wasn't around for them. I mean, it reminded me of the brilliant attacking spirit of Alberto Contador, or indeed any of the riders we mention in those kind of reverent tones, those hushed tones that... often come about when you and Kelly are discussing stuff on This Week in Cycling History. I would like to say that I never ever want to hear anyone utter the phrase Chris Froome is boring ever again. Team Sky, as you say, had a plan. They were talking about how they were talking in commentary about how every single member of that squad, from the press officer through to the mechanics, was strategically placed throughout the road to be there to hand out bottles and gel should Froome need it. It was a superbly executed plan. From the moment they hit the first climb, Team Sky came to the front and really, really hammered the pace. Annihilated not only themselves right down to Kelly Elizondo as last man, but immediately, and still with 86 kilometres to go, Yates disappeared from the back of the group. So that was the first objective for Team Sky, to get rid of the Maglia Rosa, or at least see whether yesterday's wobble from him was indicative of a longer term collapse into the third week, or whether it was just a jour sans for him. We saw immediately that Yates was in trouble, and then once Kenny Ellison, as you say, had done all he could, Chris Froome just put up more on his cadence and accelerated off the front. And you thought to yourself, this surely can't be. He'll maybe wait at the top or you know, expect other riders to be drawn out with him. There's no way that in the modern era we're going to witness an 80-kilometer solo attack over the Finisterre to Sestriere and then to Monte Jaffrao at the end. But that's exactly what we saw. It was astonishing, and make no mistake, we will and should be talking about today for a very, very long time to come, and rightly so.
See, I beg to disagree with you about saying nobody thought that he would go for the 80k, because as soon as he went, I thought he might. And the reason is, by that point in the Finisterre, and remember, when Kenny went, we were already seeing Yates out the back. Pots of Evil was there, but was looking a bit laboured. He looked in trouble. And when he went, I thought, this group is actually small enough that it might come down to a simple one-against-one time trial between Chris Froome and Tom Dumoulin. And to a certain extent, it did, because we had Carapaz and Miguel Angel Lopez in the group, along with a really important Sebastian Reichenbach up there with Thibaut Pinot. With those two guys not working, with Miguel Angel Lopez and Carapaz not working, that broke up the rhythm of that five. You know, the day would have been very, very different if all five of them had been rotating through and off. But when you've got a couple of passengers in a break, even if three of you are working pretty well, it does slow you down. And that played to Froome's absolute advantage. And I thought, as they were going through the day, the biggest tell was the fact that Froome was eating so much. You know, he was handed up a bottle and he didn't need the bottle. It was just an easy way to get gels up to him, for example. He was chucking gels down his throat as often as he could. He was drinking properly. And that attention to nutrition was what convinced me it had been the plan all along for Chris to go out and likely be on his own in time trial to the finish. I mean, I think it was just a plan beautifully executed and a real, an absolute masterclass in audacious race tactics. You know, we said yesterday that the further back you are, you were in the GC, the bigger the risk you had to take. I don't think anybody thought that risk would entail an 80-kilometre solo break, except Team Sky.
Well,
I think
absolutely.
That's what they set out to do today, and they achieved it beautifully.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant by, you know, nobody thought that Chris Froome would go on an attack 80 kilometres out. In the modern era, we just don't see that kind of thing. And you're right to highlight, I think, that difference between the group of five that formed behind. An incredible job of work by Sebastian Reichenbach, actually, to make it up to what was that group of four, which had formed in Chris Froome's wake with Dumoulin, Pinot, Carapaz and Lopez, because he was really key. But a lot of people were kind of asking, well, you know, how can Chris Froome stay away in the valley floor versus a group of five? And I think the and not only stay away, but actually take time. The psychology of that group was key. Dumoulin will have had in the back of his mind that if he goes all in to chase Froome, Pinot would then attack him when it came to Monte Jaffrao. Pinot's thinking more about the gap back to Pots of Evo, who surprised me by not making that little group as much as Pinot was thinking about Froome ahead. And it would have also, I think, played on Tom Dumoulin's mind that Carapaz and Lopez simply weren't contributing. So while you'd always, under normal circumstances, put your money on the group versus the solo rider, I think the mind games, however subtle, absolutely played into the hands of Froome, who had one objective and one objective only, whereas Dumoulin had to wrestle with the politics a couple of times. And you did see him, you know, only occasionally, it has to be said, but it was notable that he was, you know, making that gesture of, come on, guys, let's work together. And if you're having to do that, it means the group's not working exactly as it should do to bring the solo rider back.
Yeah, there were a couple of bits that really made me happy, actually, on the ascent of the Finisterre. One was the absolute trolling roadside genius of a man with a giant inhaler running beside Chris Froome. You know, it was a reminder of the less savoury background that just made me laugh. I mean, it made me laugh. And we don't know. I mean, this is why you and I were talking before we started recording. It's actually really unfair just to assume that Froome is going to be you know, sanctioned, because we just don't know yet. You know, my personal belief is he's likely to be, but let's, you know, let's let the thing run out. Let's wait until we get a decision before we instantly damn, you know, an entire brilliant performance with one thing. But the other thing that made me really happy is Thibaut Pinot, by this point, all of the other big guys are miles back. It's essentially just Pinot and Tom Dumoulin with, you know, Pots of Evil already going. Problem with his wheel, and when he changed his wheel, he got a change really fast, which was great. He pushed very hard to get back onto the Tom Dumoulin group, and it was another sign of a classy ride from Tom, that he just looked round and just made a gesture to Pino and to the others, saying, calm down, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint kind of thing. So already at that point, Dumoulin is taking the 80 kilometres of chase seriously. He knows he's in for the long haul, and he wanted that group together. But, you know, the other thing that worked in Froome's advantage was the terrain. Because other than wee stretches of valley floor, and I mean very short stretches of valley floor, the up and down was actually to his advantage. And the point at which I became convinced he was going to stay away was in the climb to Sestriere. Because at that point, the gap had been hovering at roughly the same, you know, for about 10 kilometres. You know, a wee bit in, a wee bit out. And Froome had taken a big chunk of time on the descent. But once he went up Sestriere, my thinking was, we'll see here if he can pull out an advantage. If he gains time on the climb, he's got it. Because, you know, he's a solo rider, you've got that massive climb with the Jaffrey sitting at the back. We've seen the nutrition, you know, the guys out feeding that we talked about, so we knew he was prepared. And once he started taking time on the climb to Sestriere, I got far, far more confident he was going to be able to stay away. I mean, this reminded me of... you know, the great stuff that we talk about in Twitch. But do you remember when Pantani went, was it in the Tourmalet that he took Jan Ullrich absolutely to the cleaners? And, you know, people celebrate that to this day. And that's from a guy who was convicted of doping who had blood like treacle. And, you know, I'm seeing people criticising a guy who's not even been sanctioned yet. Let's give the man his credit. That was an audacious thing that took balls the size of coconuts.
Well, I can only say stay off social media. It's not good for you. And that's well, why no, I don't want anyone.
You flack your bucket.
All I can say is I'm more cunning than you give me credit for. Yeah, I mean, I keep coming back to it. It was, barring anything else, and unless there is some massive doping scandal, you know, an hour after we're recording, it just will remain a fantastic day's racing. And it's the kind of thing that we, you know, when you, as I say, you and Kelly are talking about stuff on Twitch, it's the kind of thing where you think, oh, I wish I'd have seen that. I wish I'd have been around to have witnessed that, or yeah, just watched it on TV. We got to watch something like that today. And arguably from the most unlikely source, because Chris Froome's reputation, and I've said for a couple of years now, I think it's undeserved, given the way he's gone about his last two Tour de France wins. Everybody just has this thing about Froome being a boring rider with Sky controlling things and never, ever going on the attack. 80 kilometres out, soloing on a day that contains three major climbs, is the stuff of legend, and I was proud to have watched that, regardless of who the rider is, whether it was Contador or Nibali, or had it been Dumoulin or even Simon Yates today. It was just fantastic racing, and everybody in that peloton should look back on today, regardless of winners, losers, whatever, and just say, That was a brilliant day cycling, and this is why we got into the sport in the first place. I think we need to talk about Simon Yates, though.
I think we need to talk about Yates, but also Mitchell and Scott, because if we go right back to the start of the stage, the first hour was raced at a hellish pace, and the break was being shut down by Mitchell and Scott doing a lot of the work. And it's because they knew there were plans from Tom Dumoulin. They knew there were plans from Chris Froome and Sky, and they were seeing riders be put into the break, which they weren't in because they didn't need to be, but who could be used as that jumping stone we talked about. You know, we talk about so often where you have a rider who'll pace you for 500 metres so you can recover when you're going for a long jaunt. They knew that Chris Froome was likely to go for a long jaunt because it wasn't a secret. You know, the journalists had been talking about it at the Giro anyway. And they worked hard to stop those staging posts getting into a break. And I think combined with Yates' weakness, and he had a terrible day. I mean, we talk about Froome's day being the stuff of legend. Yates's day was the stuff of legend as well, but for a different reason. But I think Mitchelton Scott, getting tired and tireder, we've heard Matt White talk about how tired the peloton is, did so much work at the start of that, that even if they had been in a position for Yates to benefit from their help, I think they burnt themselves out trying to close down any potential breakaway companions for one of the big GC guys going later.
You're absolutely right. And if, you know, you couldn't have scripted what happened today any better if you know, from Team Sky's point of view, because we had, I think it was Sergio Hanau and Wout Poels up in that initial break working really hard. Lawrence Ten Dam, I think, and plus one other Sunweb rider. It was clearly a very dangerous break, and Mitchelson Scott identified it as such and had to work so hard to bring that back. And almost as soon as they had done, we reached the early slopes of the first climb. So the team are going into that first climb, trying to get their breath back after bringing back a really dangerous break, and I don't think they had the chance to recover from it. They just disappeared completely. And poor Simon Yates, when he did pop, there was not a rider from Mitchelson Scott anywhere near him for a couple of minutes or so. Eventually coming in a staggering 38 minutes down. And you have to say that getting gubbed, to use a good Scottish word, in the final throes of a Grand Tour now seems to be a bit of a thing for this team.
Yeah, I mean, and Yates, absolutely heartbreaking. I feel for him as much as I felt for Cadel Evans, and, you know, when he was gubbed at the end of the Giro that he looked like, you know, winning so early in his professional career. I mean, you're looking at Yates now, he's down in, what, 18th or something? And as the day progressed, I first said, what, he could finish outside the top five. That would be a real turnaround. And then you're thinking, oh, he could finish outside the top 10. By the end of the day, I was thinking, he could miss the time cut. And we could see the pink jersey in the Giro being excluded because he wasn't able to get into the finish within the time cut. He had riders alongside him in the Finisterre. Or Finestra, rather. I keep thinking it's that shipping thing. But he had riders beside him in the Finestra with his teammates. Nievi had been there, and then others started to gather around him as he fell back and they came up the climb. One of his teammates was so cold keeping pace with Simon Yates that he put a gabba on today. Yeah. I mean, it was a roasting day, and he was clearly having to ride so far within himself he couldn't get warm. Absolute collapse from Yates, the likes of which I genuinely can't remember. I mean, it was painful to watch. I can only assume he's ill, or he is just so fatigued, and he's hidden it so well. You know, we talked yesterday about his poker face, that he's managed to fool everybody, because he just went bang and never, ever looked like he was going to come back.
A great comment. And sorry, just going before I say this, you know, you talk about the possibility of the Maglia Rosa being excluded because he missed the time cut. I would like to think there would have been an actual riot had that been the case. I honestly would never, ever like to see that. I think, you know, a special dispensation would surely have been made for Simon Yates and anybody who was round about him on a day like today. Because he has animated the race so much over the first 2 weeks and taken the Maglia Rosa to this point, for him not to ride tomorrow and then and Sunday into Rome would be an absolute travesty. But to a comment I heard during an interview with his DS, Matt White, to Ashley after the race, he said, I mean, he's obviously heartbroken for his entire team and especially for Simon Yates, but he says, you know, where was Chris Froome at 24? Certainly not leading Grand Tours. So I think Simon Yates can and indeed should take a huge amount from what he's managed to achieve thus far. He's still a really young guy and he will, make no bones about it, win a Grand Tour at some point in his career.
Well, Cadel won a Tour de France and had a similar disappointment.
And I'll also say, sorry to cut across you, John, I'd also say that, you know, Cadel Evans, as great a rider as he was, he's not a similar style of rider to Simon Yates. I think Cadel had to wait for the right Tour de France to come round for him and for him to take it. Simon Yates, I think, is made for Grand Tour riding, and in a few years, I can see him not only taking one, I think there's a handful of Grand Tours in Simon Yates' future.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I mean, he's a real talent. He's clearly got the entertainment of the fans in his head. You know, we've heard him talk so often about, you know, I really want this to be entertaining. You know, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ride defensively, and the fans, you know, that's bad for fans. I was having a wee chuckle to myself, though. Do you remember after Aetna where we were going, oh, he's going to regret that 4 seconds? Doesn't really matter now, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't. I think perhaps, and not that he could have or indeed would have wanted to ride the entire race any different, I think the exuberance in attacking whenever he could is probably what did for Simon Yates. And indeed that experience, we talked yesterday about how going into this point in a Grand Tour, the two guys you've got to be very, very careful of and would be your favourites to do something would be Tom Dumoulin and Chris Froome, because they've been here before. I think that showed on the road today. Which brings me very, very neatly to Domenico Pozzovivo, who I mentioned when we were discussing that group that Tom Dumoulin led. I was really surprised that Pozzovivo didn't make that group. And if you had looked the style of riding going into today, in fact I think I said it on yesterday's show, today would have suited Chris Froome and Domenico Pozzovivo and Simon Yates if he still had it in him to cope with it. That's not really what happened. Yes, it suited Froome down to the ground. It suited Tom Dumoulin somewhat unexpectedly, given the really brave and defensive riding that he had, but it didn't suit Domenico Pozzovivo.
I had my Ginger Shaman robes on today, and I did two tweets, one of which was absolutely magnificent. I'm so proud of it. I tweeted, I think Yates might crack. I hope I'm wrong. Press send, looked up, and Yates was off the back. I mean, literally, I missed him being dropped because I was tweeting about the fact he looked like he'd cracked, and I'm thinking, this is it. My kudos as a pundit is going through the roof. And then shortly afterwards, when Froome attacked, I said, Froome could conceivably be the favourite for this Giro now, all good so far. And then I said, I think Domenico Pozzovivo will be a far harder nut to crack than Tom Dumoulin. What a load of crap.
I mean, no, but you were right in saying it, because I would have thought, you know, on paper, Domenico Pozzovivo had been looking really strong. And I, you know, essentially, if you'd have taken out Tom Dumoulin and put Domenico Pozzovivo in that group, that's how I thought today, given the way that Sky set about it, that's the way you would have expected it to play out. So, I mean, it says a lot for Dumoulin, but I'm scratching my head somewhat at Domenico Pozzovivo. And by the way, since you mentioned his right leg, I can't see anything other than Domenico Pozzovivo's jaunty right leg.
No, it was Pello Bilbao's right leg.
Oh, so it was. Well, you should
look at Domenico Pozzovivo, I said, looked like he'd had the after effects of a too hot curry.
Well, yes, okay, no, that's what it is, and I can't see anything but that now, so thanks for that.
I tell you, Pozzovivo's biggest problem today was Vincenzo Nibali. Because they've clearly kept the best riders for the tour, where Vincenzo's going to go all in. And actually, watching the end of this Giro, I can't decide whether the tour will now be a walkover for Vincenzo Nibali, or whether, you know, Froome and Dumoulin will come into it with a kind of form that will be a real challenge for the Italian, you know, absolute genius of Grand Tour riding. But Pozzovivo was isolated. Now, on a big climb like we saw today, that beautiful climb, often teammates are no use. And I cited that when I talked about, you know, the fact that Froome's ride would also be helped by the fact that everybody else was pretty isolated. But he was alone so early and for so much of that climb that mentally that must have been a real struggle. He then ended up in a group which every time we saw it looked like they were arguing about who should do the work. So he never got that coherent support that you would get from a teammate and never got into a group that looked like working. And once you started to lose time today, you know, we saw it with Pozzovivo, we saw it with Yates, we saw it with everybody. It just kept tumbling away. And he's currently sitting, you know, so far back now that he's no longer even a feature in this race. You know, realistically, there's now only two people who can win this Giro. At the start of today, there were four or five. So, you know, that's how pivotal a stage it's been. And it wasn't a good one for Domenico Pozzovivo.
So the stage result for today, Chris Froome takes the win ahead of Richard Carapaz by 3 minutes. A further 7 seconds back was Thibaut Pinot. In fourth place was Miguel Angel Lopez at 3 minutes and 12. Tom Dumoulin came in fifth at 3 minutes and 23 back. In sixth place was Sebastian Reichenbach at 6 minutes and 13. Davide Formolo came in seventh place at 8 minutes and 22. Sam Ummen was in eighth at 8 minutes and 23, along with Patrick Conrad in ninth and Pello Bilbao in 10th. So an enormous, mind-blowing change to the general classification after today. Chris Froome moves into the Maglia Rosa 40 seconds ahead of Tom Dumoulin. In third place is Thibaut Pinot at 4.17. In fourth place is Miguel Angel Lopez at 4.57. In fifth place is Richard Carapaz at 5.44. In sixth place, Domenico Pozzovivo at 8 minutes and 3. Pello Bilbao sits in 7th at 11 minutes and 8 seconds. Patrick Conrad is in 8th at 12 minutes and 19. George Bennett is 9th at 12.35. And rounding out the GC top 10 is Sam Ummen at 14 minutes and 18 seconds. The final mountain stage of the Giro d'Italia finishes where the Matterhorn starts in Cervinia. The day will start easily enough, but across the last 84 kilometres of the day's 214, the riders must tackle three first cat climbs, which will decide who will take the Maglia Rosa to Rome on Sunday.
And it's a monster. It's an absolute monster of a stage. Three first cat climbs and long. I mean, long climbs. So if you crack, you can lose time hand over fist. We're going into the final decisive stage of this Giro with, amazingly, Chris Froome in first place, but still only 40 seconds ahead of Tom Dumoulin. I want to give a special shout out, actually, to Ashley House, who in Eurosport today interviewed one of the Sunweb guys. I can't remember who it was.
It was Mark Neef, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to talk about it, but go for it.
Martin Leaf, and he said to us, Mark, everything to ride for. No, we've lost over 3 minutes. And Ashley, you know, he's like the Andrex puppy. He's just positive all the time. So he's going, yeah, but Tom can get that back. And no, lost 3 minutes. It's over. You know, did you see him? We've lost 3 minutes. No, but really, it's going to be great. Nope, it isn't. I mean, Ashley just trying to cheer him up made me smile so much. But I think Sunweb have to find some way to turn that around. You know, Tom Dumoulin is the defending champion of this Giro. He fought beautifully today, and he was a big part of what made that stage so entertaining today. He's got to go into tomorrow remembering the Chris Froome the day after the Zonkalan, you know, where Chris had been absolutely fantastic in the Zonkalan and then looked like he was suffering the next day. Froome will have gone much deeper today than he did in the Zonkalan, but, you know, if you're Tom, you have to think, well, he was weak after that. Maybe he'll be weak tomorrow. And go in with a plan the way that Sky went in with a plan today. And actually, I mean, talking about that just now brings to mind a lot of people saying, you know, how is Froome so erratic in this race? And if you look at the preparation, lay aside the stuff that's hanging over his head just now. If you look at the preparation for someone who is genuinely going for the Giro Tour double, which has been Froome's established target since the start of the year, you know, when he's been talking about it. He hasn't hummed and hawed about it the way that, you know, Tom has, for example. He said he's going for the Giro and the Tour. Then he would start this race with much less form than he would if it was his sole target. And as he builds that form, you're going to see peaks of performance, but it won't be the kind of stable peak that you get if it's your A-grade target for the year, you know, because you're not quite there. And then towards the end of the race, he's just going to get better.
Yeah, I'm glad, as I say, you brought up Mark Neef talking to Ashley, and it was probably the most Dutch thing I've ever heard in my life. That brilliant way how Dutch people are just so honest. You know, they call a spade an effing shovel, as you would say. And it was kind of heartbreaking for both Tom Dumoulin and Mark and Ashley having to interview him. It was like, no, it's over. No, definitely not. No. But I think, you know, I come back to what I said right at the preview show for the entire Giro, that I was worried about Tom Dumoulin's team not being as strong as Team Sky's. And I think that the advantage tomorrow weirdly swings to Team Sky, who, despite all their hard work this afternoon, will have actually been rested over those final two climbs. They did all their work early enough that they could actually have a rest and recuperation to the end of the stage. And with 40 seconds in the bag for Froome over Dumoulin on terrain that arguably suits Froome better than it does Dumoulin, I think we're going to see Sky just put a lid on it tomorrow. So yeah, as I say, I think that it comes back to that initial statement of being worried over Tom Dumoulin's squad round about him and an attempt to try and turn the race around at the death to overhaul that 40 seconds, whereas Team Sky, even on paper, look stronger and would have had more of an easy day, despite, you know, first appearances suggesting otherwise.
Kenny Elizondo, what's the point of employing him as a domestique? He barely gets above Chris Froome's wheel.
Well, clearly it's not about drafting when it comes to those climbs. It's just all about burying yourself, which we did see Elizondo do. They lost Vasyl Kiryienka, who's actually an important... I don't mean lost him because he got dropped. He had to retire today, which was a bit of a shock. We also lost Fabio Aru today, who eventually retired. And I don't know, I'm kind of starting to see Fabio Aru in the same shaped place in cycling as an Andy Schleck, you know, deliver, you know, so much promise, but we might be seeing the end of Fabio Aru now.
He went, and Dimension Data's bad luck continued as their team leader crashed out. So we lost a few people. Although, given how hard this race has been, I'm amazed we haven't lost more. It wouldn't surprise me to see a few non-starts tomorrow, though. That must have been a really hard day at the office for a lot of these guys.
So what do you reckon, then? Is Froome going to take it to Rome, or is there still more upset left in this race?
Nah, it's done now. I think Mark Reef was quite right. I'd be amazed, absolutely amazed, if Froome doesn't take it to Rome, because I think his form is building. You know, I genuinely think he started this race, besides that crash, not where he wanted to be if he'd been going for it as his sole target. I think he's climbing onto the top of his form now with the Tour, you know, looming in the distance. I think he's got more than enough in hand to contain any threat to him tomorrow. The one caveat to that is he'll have gone so deep today that, you know, he might not know how he'll respond tomorrow. He may just find his legs are blocked. But I'm confident that he won't, because of the feeding strategy we saw. You know, they paid so much attention to hydration and nutrition that I think he'll recover very well. You know, they'll have a recovery protocol in place tonight with massage and, you know, probably cryotherapy or all sorts of stuff. So I think he'll be fine. And I don't think Sunweb will not try. You know, I think that downbeat that we saw in the interview will pass, and they'll think about a way they can maybe try and take it to Froome. But I think you're right. I think Team Sky will be too strong. Froome will be on top of it. And the interest now for me is really more about the white jersey and, you know, the flipping of the maybe fourth or fifth places in the GC. It's been a great Giro so far, but I don't think there's a twist in the tail left. I don't know if I can take the strain if there is.
I think you're right. Thank you for joining us today as we discuss one of the most astonishing individual performances in a Grand Tour. Join us again tomorrow as we chew over the deciding chapter of what has been an incredible GC battle in the next edition of The VeloCast.